This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
We're joined by Tony Fairbairn, a tennis journalist. Morning, Tony.
Morning, how are you?
Very good, very good. Just firstly, on this Joe Konta, really quite a surprise, really. Was you surprised she's come to the forefront now?
Yeah, I mean, very surprised. I think before this year, her confidence was knocked. Obviously, she just joined her new coach as well at the end of last year. But yeah, I think this has come as a complete surprise to everyone, especially this is on her least favourite surface. I mean, if it's any surface that we would have thought Joe would have done well in, it would have been grass. But she's done well on clay. And when she got to the Rome final, people thought, okay, you know, she's doing well on this surface. But I don't think anyone would have seen her be a semi-finalist at the French Open. So, I mean, but she's deserved it. She's played amazingly well, so...
My mic wasn't on. What about Federer? How's he looking?
He's looking very good. I think not many people would have thought he would reach the semis despite his reputation, because he hasn't played on clay for about 3 or 4 years.
He's like a Duracell battery, and he just keeps going and going.
I know, yeah. He's looking very, very good.
Amazing. I know. Was he 38 now? Is he 38?
32.
Yeah, well, he's 37.
37, sorry,
in August.
Yeah, yeah.
And
37 years, that's incredible, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's amazing. I know Wawrinka had a long match before this one, but the way Federer played and managed to hold off Wawrinka's power towards the end of the match and hold it out and reach the semis is unbelievable. I don't think anyone expected it.
But Nadal's looking good, though, isn't he?
Yeah, always. He's always looking good at the French Open.
My sister's favourite. She loves Nadal.
I think everyone likes Nadal. He's got a look about him, hasn't he? What about Andy Murray? Because we were talking about him and he's... You know, obviously, we had this this false retirement, if you like, where everyone come out and made these videos. Oh, you know, you've had a great career, Andy. And then 5 minutes later, he's had his hip shaved a little bit and he's back in town.
He's back in town, yeah.
But he's only going to come back and play a bit of doubles to start with.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's wise from him. Especially as well, you have to remember that if he does play Wimbledon doubles, it is still best of five. So I think that's a good thing for him to test him over that period of time during a match. And
What's your opinion? Here's my opinion very quickly. I think, you know, hang your boots up, mate. But there you go. That's my opinion. I know that he loves the sport and, you know, but is he going to come back as good as he was?
Well, I don't think we really know that, to be honest. I think he wouldn't come back if he didn't think he would have a good chance of being back to where he was. If he was trying to come back and thinking, you know what, top 50, top 20, I don't think he would come back because of that.
No.
I think he wants to win Grand Slams. I think that's why he's come back, you know, to be world number one.
Yeah.
Look at how Ruff has come back, how Roger's come back, how Djokovic has come back. You know,
quite like that, though, surely.
They
didn't retire publicly and everyone doing their speeches and their videos. And, oh, we're so sorry you're going. And you'll be remembered as the best. And, and now he's back.
I think emotions got the better of him then. Yeah. I think it was a little bit of panic and a little bit of pressure and thought, I need to make a decision now without sort of, you know, considering all the options.
Yeah.
And that's normal, but, you know, it's not obviously sort of come out the best.
No, not really. Well, listen, he's a great player, Andy Murray. And he's been obviously our best player and we're very proud of him. Well, some people are, and other people are not so proud.
His brother's not that proud of him because...
No, Donald played with him,
I was going to say, why wouldn't he his brother team up with him? Is it almost like, you know, you've been the big star of it and now you need a doubles player to come back with? Don't look at me, mate. I'm pretty good at this doubles game.
Well, I think you can understand it from his point of view because he wants to get back to the top. Obviously, he hasn't had great success with his previous doubles partner. And, you know, he wants to win titles. He still wants to win Grand Slams. And he's in arguably the peak of his career in doubles as well. So I don't think he wants to take the risk of... Yeah. Teaming up with his brother when, right. you know, he can team up with a double specialist and have a good chance of winning.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's quite a bit of tennis to look forward to in the coming weeks. We're all pretty excited about Wimbledon anyway, and see how Joe Conta gets on in a semi-final. Thanks ever so much for joining us, Tony Fairbairn there, tennis journalist. Just, John, I'm just going back to the greatest captains of all time. Obviously, at the moment, we've only got Bobby Moore and Tony Adams. And we talked about Gary Lineker. If you think about it, okay. if you sort of go back to it, I think you've got to probably put Gary Lineker in it.
Is it, so he's a banger of some of that?
Yeah. Let's put Gary Lineker on the side and we'll put it up for discussion.
He's on the bench.
Give us a call, 0208 70 2558.
Yeah.
And let us know who you think. We haven't really got any... I mean, do you think Gazza would have made a great captain?
No. He'd have let everyone do what they want. He'd probably say, take a day off. Take a few days off, fellas. He'd have let everyone do what they want.
Do you remember that story I told you about Brian Clough?
He would have been good in authority.
Brian Clough came in and said to the Nottingham Forest dressing room.
Yes.
They won a game on the Saturday.
Yeah.
And he walked in and he said, right, well done, boys. Really good. Take the week off.
Yeah.
And walked out.
Yeah.
And everyone thought, that's pretty good. And Stuart Pearce stood up and he went, listen, everybody, see you at training Monday. Don't listen to him.
Really?
it's like you can't, you know. We'll all come back in. Stuart Pearce took charge of it.
Wow.
Yeah. Because, you know.
Why would he say, but Cluffy was a great manager.
I know he was, but he'd done things.
Take a week off.
It's just great, isn't it? I mean, I did hear that story.
It's true.
It's a great one, though. But that would have given you... Listen, if Stuart Pearce was your captain, you'd have listened to him. And that's what I'm talking about.
Right?
Some of them
take on the position of captain, even though they're not captain.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
We know him as Donny.
We know him as Donny because we've been on Air Force One.
Yeah.
And he's a nice fella. Caroline Pineda, that's right, isn't it? Pineda?
Yeah, Pineda.
You have joined us again. You're our lovely Love Sport student, let's say. You've come over here, haven't you, from not Gary, Indiana, but Indiana. Now, what do you think? The last 3 days, Donald Trump, has he earned himself any points, do you think?
I think it was kind of what people expected, and we were even watching in here their press conference, and everyone, I think, is kind of waiting for him to say something wrong, is like the general feeling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I think he had a couple moments where he kind of like could have said things better. I think it's just very like interesting watching his demeanor as opposed to when he's with the royal family. They're just so much more professional and composed.
Yeah.
But I think he didn't really surprise me in any way.
Oh, didn't he? Did you think he was going to mess up?
I don't know. At this point, you're just kind of, it's like a 50-50. Like, you don't know. It was pretty much what I expected, though.
Is Indiana in favor of Trump or not? One of those, they're not, are they?
Well, it kind of depends. They can be more of a Democratic state, but they also are in, like, the Rust Belt, and so you have a lot of those, like, old blue-collar workers that are there who want the change. And so some of that contingent was actually some of who Trump appealed to when he was running because they felt like they weren't being heard. So it's kind of a mix.
Do you think there was a photo call yesterday where he had the Queen and he also had Prince Charles. And you sort of, I know he's been sort of trained in protocol, really, I think, ahead of this visit. But there was a great, situation when they took some photos, and there was a, the Queen said, it's so wonderful that you could be here for this period of time. He said, it's my absolute pleasure. And then, he points at the Queen, he goes, wonderful woman. Wonderful woman. and you just see Prince Charles smile as if to say, yeah, that's not really what we normally say. But, you know,
I like it. You've got to go back to when
the Spice Girls, okay. when Mel B kissed Prince Charles.
No, it was
Mel B, wasn't it?
No, it was the other one.
Mel B?
Ginger.
Did you?
No, it was
Mel
Ginger.
B's kissed him as well, because I saw a rerun of
it. She's kissed everybody.
Yeah, I think she has. But, you know, it's sort of, do you push the boundaries a bit? And I suppose
you do.
Trump has been in line pretty well this time. I think that's the only time he spoke out of tone. And it was a compliment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it's definitely interesting just because he had such a different background before politics. He's always had so much power. Yeah. And so he's used to people treating him that way, like almost like royalty, where, you know, he comes from such a rich family. He has so much money that's kind of, he's treated almost like royalty in some senses in America. So then he comes here and now he's with an actual royal family.
Yes.
So it's interesting to me that he doesn't seem to try so hard as any other president, obviously, to follow everything that he should and follow the guidelines and have the same respect for what's typically expected when interacting with someone like
Anthony.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, from our point of view, like Belle and I, our generation, we're a lot older than you. You're 19. Trump was very much a joke figure to us. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Have you seen Home Alone 2?
Home Alone 2,
He's in Home Alone 2.
He's in Home Alone 2.
He makes a cameo in Home Alone 2. Anyway,
absolutely,
it's just funny because we were watching that this year and we were like, oh my gosh, we did not realize that Trump makes a cameo.
And to see him as president is... I was looking at him yesterday sitting next to the Queen. I'm thinking, this is still so surreal.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, you know, everything else he could buy... You know, he could build hotels, he could buy whatever he wants, but he's not bought this. He got voted for. Something I wanted to ask was, let's say when I send my kids somewhere or something, I just hope that they represent my family quite well. You know, don't embarrass me. Mm-hmm. And when I pick them up, they go, "Was he all right? He didn't do anything. He didn't smash anything up." And I'm just wondering whether the Americans are looking at Trump and going, has he done all right? He hasn't embarrassed
us. No, I think it's a really good analogy. That's a great way to put it. I think it is. Yeah, you kind of watch, and you know, that's what I was saying. Like, you're kind of waiting to see, does he mess up? Does he offend the Queen or someone? You know, and you're kind of scared, especially because we do value Britain as our ally, and so you really don't want to.
Well, Carolina, this is why I'm still so angry with those smelly protesters. that's your phrase.
You not all
that
of them smell.
You coined that phrase.
Just most of them.
But this is why I was so angry with them, because regardless of what you think about Donald Trump, he is here representing your country. Your country.
Mm-hmm.
He's representing it. And for me, it was... And also, he's over here to commemorate something that happened 75 years ago, which we should never, never forget. It was... You know, you can't imagine. I mean, you're 19, so the average age of the people fighting.
Yeah, my great grandfather fought in Omaha Beach.
Was 18? Well, how old was he?
I think he was 20.
There
21,
we are, right?
Maybe.
So 18 to 20, right in your age bracket. You would be, you know, you'd be at your age.
Yeah.
And I just think it was a terrible thing for those protesters to do it now, because he was over here representing America, who came into the after Pearl Harbor, came and, you know, basically saved our bacon. Let's you know, they did. You know, we'd all be talking German by now.
Yeah. Eins, zwei, drei, vier, fünf.
There we are.
Do you think that some of the perception of even some of the Americans would have changed towards Donald Trump, seeing how he's conducted himself?
Conducted himself here,
yes,
or just in general?
Yeah, here.
I don't think so. I mean, I think, like, you mean, like, the American perspective of him?
Yeah,
some
of the ones
that... I think
it's
pretty set. Like, at this point, okay. like, people who don't like him like him want him out of office as soon as possible. If, and, you know, whether it's at the end of his term or whether they're hoping that it's before. And then I think people who support him generally still do support him and generally still say he's a new kind of president. This is not a bad thing.
It's never happened before, is it? This divide.
Yeah, it's more polarizing than it ever has been before. But I think at this point, people are so, because it's such a big divide, people are so stubborn on each side that I don't really see anyone's opinions changing for him or against him now.
Right. Yeah.
Now, should he make some major mistake, that could happen. But I don't think he has any way to really redeem himself because he's just, it's his personality that people don't like. And
right.
so if that doesn't change, people's perceptions aren't going to change. And so at this point, I think it's pretty set in stone.
Who's in the in line to, you know, to oppose him? Who have we got?
So... Actually, you mentioned Gary, Indiana. So South Bend is where I go to school.
Yeah.
So the South Bend mayor is actually gaining some momentum as a Democratic candidate. His name is Pete Buttigieg. He's young. He's 37, so barely even eligible to run for president.
Wow. What is eligible? 35,
35, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's this great figure, great public speaker, just like really good at connecting with different types of people. He's done a lot with the university and a lot in South Bend to strengthen that relationship between Notre Dame and the community. So everyone in South Bend loves him. Everyone calls him Mayor Pete. He's just this great guy. So he's actually gaining some momentum. But then on the other side of that, you have Bernie Sanders, who actually he used to. Yeah. So he like wrote an essay about him like in school. Biden now. So you have like some of those older names.
Yeah,
but it's
Joe
funny
Biden.
Because you have such a big like disparity that Pete Buttigieg, when he was in school, was writing essays about these guys that he's now running for president against.
Yeah.
So it was actually very interesting. But those right now are probably.
Three of the front runners, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And just to recap, obviously we're talking about the royal family. The Queen is 90 now. Americans still as pro royal family as they always were.
Oh yes, America loves the royal family.
Do you personally
soon.
As well?
It's fun to follow. Yeah, when baby Archie was born, everyone was excited about the name and everything.
Since Meghan Markle's come in, as more...
Has that helped?
Mm-hmm. It's helped, has it? Yeah.
I'd say so. I think people really do like following her story. And I saw a lot. She went to Northwestern, which is near Chicago, so 2 hours from me. And so on Twitter, like, people were posting her yearbook photo from Northwestern and saying, I went to school with her. And so some of the people I follow on Twitter were talking about that she was in a Northwestern yearbook photo however many years ago, and now she's... You know, in the royal family.
Lastly, Caroline, have you been watching Love Island?
I have not. I've heard so much.
Well, have
actually,
you not? What, have you,
it was, I saw on Twitter last night. Something came up on like UK Twitter. It was like Love Island, and so I was excited. I know what that is now, but I have not watched yet.
The only plus side of that is I would assume that a lot of people will jump away from watching the Kardashians.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, the Bachelor and the Bachelorette are the big thing right now.
Oh, the Bachelor,
is that right, really?
Yeah, people are intense. Like a group of my guy friends at school one day, they were like, oh, we're watching TV tonight, like... come over, we'll like make popcorn. So we're like, okay, so we have this watch party, and so we get there and we're like, what are we watching? And they're like, The Bachelor. Obviously.
I love the way you said that, watch party, we'll make popcorn.
That's
something we don't do over here.
Really?
I like that.
Yeah.
A watch party.
Yeah.
You like
so
that?
It's kind of fun.
We just get a KFC in, don't we?
I passed a KFC yesterday and I was like, oh, that's so funny. And then we sit down and we watch The Bachelor, and these guys who I had no idea would ever find this entertaining are like, oh my gosh, no, she didn't. She did not do that.
Yeah,
he didn't do that. Like, they're
obviously
just so into
it's the same
it.
Thing,
it's so
fun.
It's the same thing.
Thank you very much for coming in and giving your perception. Obviously, over the next couple of months, we have a new quarter in.
Awesome.
Quite a lot. Caroline Pineda, thank you very much. We're going to go to a
thank
word
you up. Guys.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
We've got Kieran Crichton. We're going to talk about the cricket any minute. But England captains. Good one?
England football captains.
Yeah.
You can't, even though it was well before my time, you can't look past Bobby Moore.
Yeah. Bobby's
oh, no, he's in. He's a given.
He has to be.
Yeah.
There's no argument, especially as England have been atrocious up until the last sort of 18 months. They've been atrocious for so long. Yeah.
Well, we said Euro 1990 was a good time. Euro 96 was a great time. We had Tony Adams as captain then. And yeah, probably last year. But Harry Kane, a good captain?
No, an exceptional footballer, but I just don't... obviously, we can't give a complete kind of analysis of it because we're not in the dressing room, we're not in the England camp.
No.
But I can't imagine he's particularly motivational or particularly kind of captain material. I don't think... You talk about Tony Adams there.
Yeah.
That breed is dying, and there aren't that many of that. Right. When people say the leadership figures, I don't think you've got many of them nowadays. Now, whether that's a good or bad thing, I don't think it is necessarily a good or bad thing.
Sorry, Kieran. Although the Spurs players do say that Kane's very, very good.
Motivational.
I suppose that means and it makes it difficult to really know.
He came in the dressing room in the Champions League when we beat
Ajax. In the semi-final.
Right,
yeah.
The semi-final of Ajax when we were, 2-0 down in the first half, I think it was. Something like that. And he came into the dressing room, apparently, and cheered them all up.
My trouble is I wouldn't understand a word he said. But the Roy Keane, I think Roy Keane is, I know that we're not talking England captain, but Roy Keane, a powerful captain that drove your team on. I mean,
and would have beaten you up if you hadn't done what you said. Yeah.
Well, that's another part of it. But also, motivational. You know, someone's going to motivate you and put an arm around you as well and tell you when you've done well. There's something I said to my son. My son said he gets a lot of, one coach really sort of is on his back a lot.
Yeah.
And I said, he's on your back a lot.
I'll tell you what. I know he's heavy. Very, very heavy.
But I said to him, when he praises you, you feel $1 million.
That's right.
Because it's rare.
It's rare.
Okay, if they praise you all the time, it doesn't mean anything.
That's right.
If someone has a go at you all the time, give you one bit of praise, oh my God, he's all right, you know?
Yeah. It's true, isn't it?
We're doing this with Donald Trump at the moment.
Yes, right? We are. Okay?
We're saying, actually, he's not bad, the fella, you know?
Yeah.
Kieran, talk to us about cricket. Obviously, we got beat. England got beat by Pakistan. We won our first game, but we got beat by Pakistan. What went wrong there?
It was a bit of a reality check that it wasn't all going to be plain sailing. England, of course, heading into the tournament as the favourites in home conditions, rightly so, over the last 4 years since the embarrassment of 2015, which was one of the painfulest memories I ever have of watching England getting knocked out in the group stages. They've been phenomenal since. So they rightfully came in as favourites. But then, as Mark Wood's been saying in the papers today, there's a target that's on your back. Everyone wants to beat you because you are the team to beat. And yes. So I think in that game against Pakistan, they didn't bowl brilliantly, but they didn't bowl awfully. The fielding was atrocious, and it was amazing how within just a matter of a few days against South Africa in the opening game, England's fielding was spot on. If you remember that Ben Stokes catch,
yeah.
England's fielding was absolutely perfect. You couldn't have asked for a better fielding performance.
You know it was a good catch because it was on news at 10.
Exactly, when you get the news media reporting on it, you know.
We were on news at 10 as well.
But we was a good catch at the time ourselves.
but then on against Pakistan, it was like watching a bunch of under 10s. Fielding, it really was atrocious. Bar Chris Wokes, who took four catches, it was awful. And in tight games where only 20 or 30 runs in it between the two teams, sometimes I think people can underestimate the importance of fielding in cricket. It is such an integral part of the game.
How do you train for fielding? Because at the end of the day, look, we can all catch a ball, right?
Well, I don't know whether everyone can catch a ball.
Really?
Because it's to do with hand-eye coordination.
My dad was a great catch.
Yeah.
He really was a good fielder, my dad. He loved cricket, my dad, and he was a very
good...
what
I'm saying, John, how do you train for catching?
I don't think you do. It's natural.
That's what I mean.
Natural.
So it's kind of talking from my own experience, when you're growing up playing cricket, it's drummed into you from such a young age that you do a lot of practice.
Yeah.
I always remember, for myself and my older brother, my granddad used to get his old tennis racket out, and with a tennis ball, used to just whack them miles in the air, and we used to say keep going up, and it just a tennis ball is obviously different to a hard cricket ball, but it just gets you practicing, gets you used to a ball going really high up in the air and having the concentration and the hand-eye coordination to know where to be and to where to have your hands. So I think with fielding, unlike with batting and bowling, where I think a lot of it is natural, that you have to be kind of naturally quite gifted at one or the other.
Yeah,
obviously, you have all-rounders that can combine the two, and that's a valuable asset.
Yeah.
But with fielding, it is something you can improve. And if you work hard on it, you don't necessarily need to be incredible athletes like Ben Stokes.
No.
You can be, well, obviously, they're all pretty fit, as they have to be at this level.
More fit now than they were years ago.
Exactly.
Right?
But you don't necessarily need to be the most athletic person to still be a good fielder, to do the simple things. And in that Pakistan game, England were not just dropping catches, but they were not stopping balls and they were going for four. They were not stopping balls within the circle, and so they were allowing easy singles to go by. It was just really, really sloppy. They were throwing balls at the stumps when batsmen, there was no chance of a run out, and therefore it was ricocheting, going off for four. It was all very, very sloppy. Mm. And when you're trying to win a World Cup, all of the different facets of the game have to be on point.
On the stopping the balls, do you what's the rule there? Throwing yourself in front of the ball, or sliding? What's the general sort of training for that?
If you're on the boundary, it's always the long barrier.
Yeah.
It's always the one you're coached from such a young age, and that's if the ball's obviously coming directly at you, because you can't do a long barrier if you're trying to sprint after and dive a ball that's 2 yards away. Mm. But I think part of the problem is they've set such high standards, and at this level, we expect so much that if they just slightly drop off that, it's quite noticeable. But in that game against Pakistan, it was so noticeable because they were just doing all the simple things that you would normally expect them to do. They were just doing them so poorly. And in tight games where so many runs are being scored at this level, if you're just 1% or 2% off it, suddenly that gets kind of exploited and gets emphasised when it wouldn't be on another day.
How well protected are your doodads? Your bits?
In the field?
Yeah.
Well, there is no protection.
That's mad. Why not? I would always think, hang on, I'm going to get a ball right in my doodads.
In the trumpet.
What I mean,
in the trumpet area.
Only batsmen. Batsmen. Wicket keepers.
Wicketkeepers, yeah, they do.
That's what I mean.
Wicketkeepers, yeah.
They'll have
a box in and their pads that are usually kind of underneath the whites.
I'd need a really big box.
That ball could hurt you.
It can, but some people, kind of cynics, would say if you're a batsman, use the wooden thing in your hand.
Yeah,
and if you're in the field, use... use your hands, because God gave you hands for a reason.
They certainly did.
So they would say...
This is turning into a carry-on film.
It
really is. Against Bangladesh, we face Bangladesh on Saturday. Is that an easy one for us?
I don't think it'll be as easy as you think. At the last two World Cups, England have lost to Bangladesh in 2011 and 2015. It seems to be a bit of a bogey side for England at World Cups. England, I think, will still win it quite comfortably, but don't expect this to be easy. Bangladesh beat South Africa. They really pushed New Zealand. It was an absolute brilliant game at the Oval last night. Anyone that didn't watch it, watch the highlights, because it went right down to the wire. Very, very close game. So I don't think it will be as easy as many think. Some people will probably just be rocking up to Cardiff on Saturday thinking England will just roll over Bangladesh. Obviously, we hope that's the case, but it won't be as easy as that. Yeah. Bangladesh, all these teams in the World Cup,
they
cause
love cricket,
a shock.
Bangladesh, don't they?
Exactly, and they've got so many, such a huge population that they have so many people to choose from. But I still think England will win easily, but it won't be as easy as maybe some people might imagine.
And what about Jofra Archer? How did he perform in the second game?
Against Pakistan, it was, again, a bit of a reality check. We've seen so many good things from Jofra Archer so early on in his one-day career, but he got a bit of tap when what was really quite expensive. I mean, most of the bowlers didn't bowl particularly well. Only Moeen Ali and Mark Wood bowl well in that game. But it was the first real time that he's been given that sort of treatment. And so now, I suppose, is the big test. In when you're at this level, it's about how you react to an off day, because everyone has them. It's not like anyone
it's
is exempt.
We've sort of half pinned our hopes on him, haven't we?
I think there's been a lot of excitement, and obviously with the eligibility rules changing at the end of last year, there's obviously been this hype, this build-up to him becoming eligible in March, that there is that pressure on him. But with his performances in the IPL over the last few years, I'm sure that he'll be able to deal with that, because in the IPL, you're not going to have great games all the time. So he should be able to deal with it, but it will be a test, because at international cricket, in a World Cup, there's a huge amount of pressure, not just on him, but England. So it's important that he does react from an off day.
Let me just tell you something, Kieran. Get out. Should I tell you why you got to get out? Because you talk about cricket.
Yep.
Don't talk about cricket. Don't talk about football. Don't talk about tennis. Because after this, we're going to talk about Love Island.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're back with Bell and Sperling. We are talking reality shows at the moment.
And
how it's gone so mad lately with huge reality shows. Obviously, we started off with Big Brother.
Yeah.
And now it's just become absolutely mad with this Love Island situation. And Kieran's still with us.
Yeah.
Have you been watching it, Kieran?
Because he's a fan, that's why.
I absolutely love it. What I will say is the premise of the show is appalling. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. It's a rubbish concept, but it is absolutely TV gold. I mean, it does rely upon there being personalities, and the people in there have to be interesting enough, because obviously they're kind of the kings of the show. It's all about people in this. But I just love it. It's just everything about it, and especially when there are spats, when it all kicks off.
Yeah.
It is great television. It's an opportunity. I know people say they're brain dead, and Piers Morgan is a particular critic of
that.
It.
But I'd say that too, yeah.
It's great to kind of just relax in an evening and just watching this all unfold.
Do you know what? You just said relax, though. I find it really awkward. Like, some of it is so awkward to watch. You know, when, like, last night, the Tyson Fury's brother is sort of got edged out by the girl. She's gone back to the other fella. So he thinks he'll go for his second choice. He tries it on with her, thinking he's the cool cat. And she's gone, actually, no, you're only coming to me because I'm the second choice. And it's embarrassing. I find it really... I was hiding behind the sofa.
How far can they... Okay, I don't know anything about Love Island. I've never watched that.
Well, you're learning. Very, very you're proud. Learning.
No, I'm not. Very, very proud to say, Towie, Love Island, made in this one, made in that one. Mm. I have no idea on any of them. I've never seen them. Tell me something. With this, you know, he's going to the next one because that one's turned him down. So basically, it's like it's a love-in, isn't it? It's like a...
Yeah.
You know, chuck the keys in and...
Well, no.
See who you fancy.
You have to be with a partner, otherwise you get voted off the show. So it is a game. Mm. That's the whole point of it.
How far do you go with the old, you know?
Well, it does.
Can they go all the way?
It does happen, doesn't it?
It does. There's a hideaway where couples can go for. I think the most awkward would probably be, either for the parents of the people in there,
or for
parents anyway watching it with children. When I'm older, I can't imagine ever watching if it's still going Love Island with my children. It'd be incredibly.
It's really
awkward.
Strange. I do, but we actually sort of censor it. For my because we only let him watch the first half hour and then he's got to go to bed.
Go to bed?
Well, he does. Yeah, no, that's fine. It's fine. But you know, I've had a few people say you can't let him. But do you know what? He watches the first half hour and then my daughter watches it. She's 14, going on 15. And the trouble is, all these kids are watching it. And they're going into school, and everybody knows the next day. And anything's a little bit lively like that, we change channels or...
Well, and I was on the train just the other day after, I think, the first episode, and I was just sat there and heard a couple of girls discussing it. It is literally everywhere. I think 4 million tuned into the first episode, which is the record that the Love Island has had for a first episode. And it's just everyone from a kind of 15 to 25 age group, everyone is talking about it.
I'm sorry, but I don't know how a 10-year-old would get it, but
this is what I'm saying. It's changed so much. We're now joined. We're talking obviously everything Love Island, and it's taken over people's viewings for some reason.
Yeah.
We're joined by Genevieve Zawada, who's a dating
Ozawada,
dating expert. Genevieve,
hello.
Afternoon.
Hello. Is it Zawada or Zawada?
It's Zawada.
Zawada.
Yeah.
There we
go. just Genevieve. By the way, Genevieve, my daughter's.
Oh, that's a great name.
My daughter's middle name is Genevieve because we couldn't decide whether to call her Genevieve or Persia.
And years ago, Genevieve, we was very good friends with a producer called Derek B, and he came to us with an idea of doing a song called Genevieve, and we did a song called Genevieve.
We did. My Sweet Genevieve.
My Sweet Genevieve.
Very, very
yeah.
good song. Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to hear that one
yeah.
day.
Yeah. You know what? We'll have to try and dig that out. It was a good song. just obviously, we've all been a bit gripped by this in the first two or three nights.
Not me.
Except for Johnny Sperling, who detests it with a vengeance. It is quite awkward viewing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's awkward when you're older and you know kind of where it's going to end. You know, I think the youngsters sort of watch it in awe and thinking, oh, this is what relationships are all about, which is a bit worrying, really. Especially you were sort of saying what the average age is watching it. It's quite interesting. I've got a little group on Facebook with some of the other mums where we've got kids of the ages that would want to watch it.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting sort of seeing everybody's comments and feedback.
What is the feedback on that? Because I'm a bit torn. We let my son watch it for, he's sort of 11. We watch it for a bit, but then my daughter is... And that's the pressure, is because the daughter's 14, 15, and she's talking about it all the time. So he's going, well, I want to watch it. So...
Well, I think there are some good things that come out of it, that when you're watching it as a family, you can talk about relationships, you can talk about what's acceptable, what isn't acceptable, and it opens up discussions about relationships and sex and, you know, boys and girls and dating and all of these sorts of things that are sometimes quite difficult and contentious issues that you know, especially with young people, you know, 11, 12, 13-year-olds, they can sort of shy away from those conversations. So I think it can be quite helpful in that way. That you can, you know, what do you think? You know, get their viewpoint. I know with my son a few times when he watched it last year with me, he was 14, and I said to him, so what do you think is going to happen here? And his viewpoint's really interesting. So I think if you allow little people to express what they think, then it can be quite healthy in some ways.
You think, as a dating expert, that it's quite a healthy program to watch?
I have to say, the conversations I have is I listen to my kids, and I think they've heard too much over the years from me, because they've sort of got my viewpoints on dating and relationships, so they tend to agree with me in, oh, they shouldn't be doing that, and oh God, he's really laying himself on the line there. You know? So we have those sorts of conversations.
What I wanted to ask you, Genevieve, is because we go back to the time that I spent most of my life in nightclubs and loved nightclubs.
I'd be four or five
times a week, and we lived there. In fact, at one point, the owner of the club, I won't mention it, said that you really should just get a bed here. And I said, I've got it in a cupboard. You just didn't realise. But it was
that's true.
Johnny Sperling will vouch for that. But I loved it, but I loved the fact of chatting to people, meeting people, and chatting someone up. What's happened to dating now? We just swipe with our finger left or right now, don't we?
Oh, it's sad. It's really sad, and it breaks my heart. I mean, I'm a big advocate. I run events, and I do face-to-face matchmaking, and I'm what I class as a traditional matchmaker. And I want to bring people together, get them off their phones, and I have a no-phone ban. You know, there's no phones allowed on dates. That's my biggest rule.
It's a good
because
role.
I think, and I get people talking. I don't want them texting each other.
No, I want people talking.
People have lost the art of communicating. They've lost the art of. I have to teach people how to flirt.
Yes. Well, we've got with us at the moment. He's a Love Island fan, Kieran Critchard. I mean, Kieran, you're a young man. How old are you?
21.
I mean, he's 21. Do you know what I mean? And I mean, your idea of dating is so different because you've grown up with social media, and we didn't. You know, it's. What's your take on it?
Well, I think it kind of gives. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you, Genevieve, was about kind of one of the things pointed out about Love Island is how the relationships perhaps go a bit faster because you're spending 24 hours a day with everyone.
Yeah.
That, for example, with Joe and Lucy, it seems like Joe's kind of. As if he's kind of been in a relationship with her for so long.
Yeah.
What do you make of kind of his reaction to Lucy coupling up with Tommy and therefore his feelings of kind of devastation? Really?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think the problem with reality TV and when you're with someone 24 hours is you tend to connect very quickly. As you've quite rightly pointed out, you know, in a normal run of things, you might meet for a drink for an hour or two, then you meet again a few days later for a couple of hours. You know, they are almost having 10 dates in a day.
Yeah,
if you actually put it into if we put it into a normal situation to spend a night in a bed with somebody after you've probably known them, you know, on the first night a few hours, is you are really fast tracking things.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I'd be on the sofa if it was me, probably for a couple of weeks.
It's true, but, it's true, isn't it?
And
I was looking at that last time, thinking they've only known each other a day, and they've got to sleep together for.
There's that real invasion of your personal space. You know, personally, I think I like my space a little bit too much.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to share my space with somebody so close so soon. But I think
especially
Joe's
if he keeps blowing off at night, that'd be a nightmare.
But it depends what they've got on the menu, of course.
And these girls
talking about what they're going to be wearing at night, and I'm going to put little sexy pajamas on or something. I'm thinking, oh my God, they're just asking for trouble. And you know, they've got a no sex ban and no touching and none of this sort of stuff. Mm. So they really are. You know, creating a few problems. But I think the girls this year are really respectful, and they are setting some really good boundaries with the guys already, which I think is really, really helpful. But the guys are, the peacocking's happening already, which is from day one, which is which is lovely to see. But it's a bit cringeworthy at times.
Well,
Anton is making me cringe on a daily basis.
It looks like we've got a girl coming in tonight. She was the sort of at the end of the show last night. She's sort of saying she's coming in tonight, and every chance. I'm not 100% sure. It looks like she's from Essex. She's coming in tonight.
She is.
I know. I think that, and she's really going to set the cat amongst the pigeons. She
says,
"I don't care what's going." And this is what worries me. We're going to have somebody in tonight we've all been trying. They've been trying to be quite nice for the first three or four days.
Yeah.
But I can see this. What is it on for? 6 weeks, Kieran? Six,
8 weeks.
8 weeks.
No.
8 weeks.
No.
8 weeks.
Oh. 8 weeks of joy.
It's going to go mental, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I predicted that they put the cat amongst the pigeons. I'm writing for a couple of papers at the moment, and one of the things I predicted is they're going to put a girl in who's going to be feisty, who's going to go in to make a name for herself.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm predicting that's what's going to happen tonight.
Oh, it's painful. But do you know what? It's painful. Luckily.
Very painful.
Really luckily, I've got a gig tonight, and so I won't be watching it. And I'm going to make Johnny Sperling watch
won't.
It tonight
no, no,
so
no, no,
can,
no, no,
he can report on it tomorrow.
There's always catch-up, guys. You can always watch it.
No.
Don't start. Genevieve, thanks ever so much for
your
time.
I'm sure we'll be talking to you a lot more, Genevieve, about it.
We love that name, Genevieve. Thanks ever so much. Dating expert there, Genevieve.
What a lovely name.
Okay. Round of applause for Kieran, who's
Kieran.
Joined us. And,
well done, Kieran. An extended version there.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It was the Green Book. Green Book that won the Oscar.
It was.
It was the film.
I haven't seen it. You've seen it.
I've seen it. I saw it on the plane.
Good book. Powerful, isn't it? Powerful.
Powerful film.
Powerful.
Listen, we've been talking about D-Day for the past 2 days, and really, I was trying to get my kids to watch it last night and show them how powerful this story is.
Absolutely.
You know, because we know it, but kids should realise what these soldiers,
well,
these young men did for us.
We were only third-hand generation. We were second or third. These are like fifth and sixth.
Yeah.
It's further away
from
them.
Yeah, but I still think that they should know what these soldiers did for us, you know, and it's such a powerful thing. Otherwise, we would have been speaking German right now. Eins, zwei, drei, vier, fünf. We're joined by Phil Campion now, friend of the show, XSAS. Phil, how powerful is what we saw, some of the stories yesterday?
Some of the stories need to be kept alive. It's the most powerful stuff we've got in remembering where we came from.
Yeah.
And one of the questions I always ask myself is what they fought for, is it what we're producing for them? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So we're well off the mark sometimes with some of this stuff. And it's because it isn't talked about enough.
No, absolutely, Phil, you're right. Now, I mean, listen, you can't help but thinking, you know, that they were kids going out there. They were kids. I mean, a letter dropped on the mat. And you can't imagine, I mean, you know, they had to go. There was nothing that they had to go or they go in prison. You know, they were 18 to 20-year-old, Phil. Do you know what I mean? You can't help but think, oh, my God, you know?
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible to think. You know, there's a gravestone over there that I was looking at yesterday, 16 years old. At 16 years old, you've just literally left school. You've not even been to college. And the first thing you do is see the tailgate come down onto a hostile beach, which is absolute hell on earth, and you're expected to get out and fight.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you do, and you die.
Yeah.
I mean, that's on another level. That's not a computer game. That's not something that is just made up. That's not something that's fun. That was these people's reality.
Yeah. Phil, obviously you had a lot of training to go behind enemy lines and stuff like that. Do you train your mind to deal with anything? Because
you can look at it. You can train yourself as much as you want, but on the day of the race, you'll perform how you perform. You know, they say knowledge dispels fear, and to a certain extent it does. But it still can't prepare you for body parts whistling past your face, stepping over things that are that badly mutilated you can't even recognise what they are anymore. The stench, the smell, the blood on your clothes. Oh. It's all that sort of stuff that is just, you know, it's horrendous. And these people went through that so that we could have the liberty to do what that woman was doing the other day, dobbing off and shouting and throwing milkshakes on people and all that sort of stuff. You disgusting individual.
Disgusting.
You're a creep.
Disgusting. Absolutely, Phil.
What did you make of some? Like we've said that, you know, protesting is, you know, sometimes it's good to go against the grain a bit, but the wrong time to do it.
Look, protesting is one of the rights of freedom that we fought for, and I totally get it. But you can protest in a manner which doesn't result in what we saw the other day from these people, which was absolutely, they flipped it on their head. They'd become the aggressors.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's funny.
Know, for what you're trying to achieve, you've actually become what you wanted them not to be.
Phil, our very own Patrick Christie's, our political correspondent, went over there just to, you know, just see what was going on. And he was attacked and they were aggressive. And he's saying to him, no, I'm not over here I'm just over here to report on it, you know. And they were attacking
him. It's freedom of speech until you say something they don't want to hear.
Yeah, that's right.
What
do you know what I mean? I mean, how does that work?
No. Yeah. Phil,
that's dictatorship, that is. That's you telling me I can't say that. Yeah, I'm expected to listen to you say what you want to say.
Phil.
Oh, come on.
What do you think? I think, I mean, listen, regardless of what your opinions are on Donald Trump, on his politics, I thought he handled himself very well. He rose above it, don't you think?
He was dignified.
Yep.
He did what he had to do. He came over here. And don't forget, he's over here to pay his respects to their dead, our dead,
right.
You know, anyone involved in the war effort's dead.
Yes.
You know, so he's over here not to cause a row, not to have a fight, not to have a punch out of anybody.
Yes.
Obviously, he's got his state visit and he'll have a word with some of the politicians. But at the end of the day, Donald Trump is over here doing his bits and pieces.
Yes.
Right? Whether you like him or loathe him, America is always going to be one of our best allies, hopefully, and will remain so for a very long time.
Yes.
And so you've got to put up with and bear it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Absolutely.
Just on that side of it, Phil, when you fought yourself and you've gone into battle and stuff, are you looking back at the politicians that have sent you there? What I'm saying is just sort of fighting for the country. How would you feel if someone like Corbyn was in power? Would it still feel like you're fighting for your country?
I'd feel betrayed. Yeah. And I'd feel betrayed because he stands for things that I fought against in some respects. I would feel betrayed, yeah.
Yeah.
And you'd also be betrayed by the people who voted him as well. Don't forget that.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got nothing against, you know, I'm not a particularly politically minded person, and I don't mind some of the parties, but as an individual, I cannot stand Jeremy Corbyn, and I've made it quite public.
Me neither.
But purely because, I mean, it doesn't really
because
stand
of his relationships with certain organisations, yeah. I find it impossible for me to accept him as a politician who could possibly run this country.
I agree.
And that's the only reason. I can deal with some of the Labour Party's policies. I can deal with some of the Conservative Party's policies and probably everybody else's policies.
Yep.
As an individual, that man's not fit to run.
Spot on.
You know.
I agree.
And that's it.
What about, obviously you see some of the guys last night, the 95-year-old man who sort of jumped out of the aeroplane.
Two of them, 95 and 94.
And, you know, I mean, it's quite an amazing story, isn't it?
Absolute, you know, heroes of the day and heroes of today as well. Do you know what I mean? And it'd be, you know, they're rightly showcased. They are heroes, absolutely. You know, the pair of them.
Well, one of the old veterans, he said, I don't class myself a hero. He said because I was a letter dropped on the floor, and I had to go and fight for my country, and I did. I had to do it, but I thought, my God, you are a hero, my friend.
Do you think, Phil, we haven't got that anymore? I mean, like kids are just watching PlayStation.
And our soldiers today will fight just as hard and just as ferociously as the soldiers of the day, and they've proved it time and time again. Hmm. I think what we don't have nowadays is the public backing across the board.
Yes.
We have it in certain areas, but we don't get the public backing and support from everybody. There's too many people upsetting the apple cart in areas that they shouldn't be upsetting the apple cart, you know?
Yeah. Is that what it feels like in the forces, Phil, that you feel that there's a lot of the country that are not supporting him if they do go into battle?
Yeah, I don't want to get all on top of it because, you know, I want to remember D-Day as well. But when you get soldiers being pulled across the coals, i.e. soldiers A to Z or whatever it is they're calling them, you know, when you fight in a foreign country, as did Brian Wood, and you get brought back and prosecuted...
Ugh.
You know,
it's ridiculous, isn't it? Ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, it might, you know,
absolutely insane. All this historical stuff is absolutely so far off the mark, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Phil, do you think going forward, do you think that soldiers will have to wear high-vis jackets?
just cover them in cotton wool, do you know what I mean? That's all right. Yeah, unbelievable, isn't it?
We've gone so PC.
We'll get a few more CCTV cameras up.
Yeah, I was just thinking you'll have a health and safety inspector in the trenches with you.
I'm telling you now, on their exercises, they already do, and rightly so. But, you know, no, it has gone past that limit. It's you know, it's absurd. And especially this historical stuff. I'm not for any trooper ever doing anything wrong on the battlefield. And if he does do something that's outside of the rules and regulations he's governed by, well, then he should be punished.
Yeah.
But to drag someone across the coals for something that happened 70-odd years ago, that is just insanely ridiculous, and I can't get my head around it.
It is absolutely.
And especially when they sort of like said to the people that were our aggressors at the time, don't worry about it, lads. You can sort of like have a waiver.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
It is.
That's great for morale. That is, you know, great for recruitment, great for morale, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, agreed.
And in the next breath, they're saying, oh, we can't get people in the army. Really? What's the matter with you?
Yeah, I wonder why.
Well, that's one of the reasons. That's what I was saying, you know, to sort of, how do we recruit now, Phil?
Yeah.
How do we
I think, you know, I'm very positive and upbeat about the army. I'm involved with the army cadets. And I like to promote the good things that the Army doing and promote things in a good light. And get, you know, the Army gives and especially the cadets, gives kids skills for the rest of their life, not just for the amount of time they spend in the forces. The stuff they get from being there, if only the discipline alone.
Absolutely,
will support
absolutely.
Them through the rest of their life. But you know what I mean? And I just think that, you know.
No, no, you're right. You're right. No, absolutely, it should be. But what we've got to remember about D-Day and about those kids that lost their lives, well, they had to do it. A letter fell on the floor, and they had to go and fight for the country. They weren't trained soldiers. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't something they wanted to do. They had to do it.
Some of these people lied and volunteered to go out there. They lied about their ages. They wanted to represent their country. They wanted to go out there. Not that they had to, some of them. Mm. They wanted to. Mm. They wanted to make a difference. They wanted to change the course that the world was headed.
Yeah.
And they did.
And they did.
And they did a terrific job. But are they getting what they deserve now in the way that our country's heading and all the rest of it? I don't think so.
Yeah, I would assume that if they look back and see how the country has turned into, they would have probably said we really were fighting for.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, there would have been an element of that for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Just on, Phil, I know we spoke about this before. Do you think that, I know that you said it's not nothing like the training that you guys went through with Ant Middleton and the guys, but the SAS program that we watch, do you think that people would watch that and think, oh, I'd like to be involved in the Army? Has it helped at all for recruitment?
I don't think so. I think if you wanted a more realistic take on things, you needed to watch the programme about the parachute regiment or the programme about Harrogate, where it actually showed real soldiers doing real training and achieving real berries on their heads at the end of it.
Yeah, I saw that one, actually. The parachute one was quite incredible.
The parachute regiment's one was particularly good, and I think it's done, in terms of recruitment, their levels have gone up a little bit, to be honest.
Oh, well, that's a
positive. So it does work.
Yeah,
it's a positive. You put the Army in a good light, they do good things.
Absolutely.
It's just simple, isn't it?
Phil, as always, thanks ever so much for your time. Really,
thanks, Phil.
Really enjoy our chats. Phil Campion there, friend of the show, XSAS.
Telling it as it is, mate. Telling it as it is.
Yeah, well... Like I said to you, that, you know, I get the kids to watch last night, and is it the end of it? You know, it's like it's a strange one, isn't it?
Bell and Sperling on Love Sport Radio. Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. We'll